Voilà.
Good morning, everyone. Where did we stop? Page 484. Maybe at the break. Sorry?
485, but we're not sure where
we're on page 484 or 85, but does anybody know the line? Rosa?
84.
Yes.
I think it's
385. Yes.
And the line 358 finish. 9.
Okay. All keeps a phantom immortality. That's where we stopped. Yes. Okay. Savitri is looking into herself to search for her soul. And the first experience is this revelation of the cosmic past. And particularly what we are reading just now of the nature of humanity. Not the surface nature, but the much vaster nature that we are not usually aware of. So the section that we're reading now began, all the world's possibilities in man are waiting in man as the tree waits in its seed. And these are good possibilities and bad possibilities. No? And what we were just reading at the end of the session last week, we read about how things that we think have been conquered and dealt with, they keep coming back. They keep coming up from the subconscious. And there was these lines about the old gang dismissed, all those movements and feelings and thoughts that we think we have rejected, they come back. Because even though their passports have been cancelled, the habitual acceptance of the consciousness is there. So the old rejected nature still survives. All keeps a phantom immortality. So at the top of page 484. So shall we start on the back line today? Jinhee, you would start? Yes. Yes, thank you. Anything to ask?
Well, you mentioned the nature's sequences, but in that section does not mention day and night, the movement of planets.
I think when he says nature's sequences, he means the links in the chain of causality. No. We're on page 484, Paula, at near the top. Irresistible are nature's sequences. There's like a chain of determinisms from the Big Bang onwards. No? These are nature's sequences, and it's almost impossible for us to resist them. They have their effects. No? So this links up with the doctrine of karma. He's emphasizing that the seeds of sins renounced, things that have been done wrong, things that separated us from our divine being, we've recognized and renounced them, but they come up again. The consequences of them also. And we've cast out from our hearts all kind of wrong things. We have to face that again. Our dead selves, what we've been in the past, comes up again to slay. It really tries to destroy our living soul. Only a portion of us, part of us, lives in present time. But that part of us which lives in this particular lifetime and at this particular moment is still connected to all the vast selves that we have been and that we will be, all our potentialities. So at the moment we are only somewhat aware of this portion of us, but there's this secret mass which is behind, groping in dim inconscient. We've risen up through evolution out of the inconscient and subliminal, and we're living in this uncertain light of the mind, and we are trying to know and understand and control the world around us. But we don't know what this world means. It's very doubtful, no? To us, because its purpose and its meaning are hidden from our sight. So the situation that we are in now is that perhaps we may be aware of, or whether we are aware of or not, there's a divine being who is above our consciousness, hidden in the mystery of his own light. We can't grasp him with our little minds. Around us, what we experience is this vast confusion of ignorance lit by the uncertain ray of human mind. That's the light that we have at the moment that's shining on the world and showing the world to us. And below us is this dark, deep, silent world of the inconscient. If we look at our personal experience, it's something like that. But now he's going to tell us something else. Kengye, you like to read? Okay, all right, Sophie.
Shall discern and make earth like divine, truth make the world not the blind nature false. For here are not our large divine heights, our summits in the superconscious glade, our glorious with the very face of God. There is our aspect of eternity. There is the figure of the God we are. His young and aging look on deathless things, his joy now escaped from death and time.
Thank you. These lines of the first sentence remind me of Sri Aurobindo's Gayatri Mantra. It's a new version of the old Gayatri Mantra. The original Vedic Gayatri Mantra is a mantra to illumine the mind. But Sri Aurobindo said that his mantra can illumine the whole being, all the planes of existence, to bring the light of truth into all planes of existence. So we can pray, we can concentrate and try to meditate on that highest form of the sun, the supreme light. The light of the Supreme, Jyoti Parasya Dhimahi, that shall illumine us with the truth. So that this, what we are aware of now, is only matter becoming conscious. We are in a particular stage in this scale of evolution. But this is not all we are, and this is not all that the world is. That greater self of knowledge is waiting for us, that supreme light in the truth conscious vast. It's seeing from high above this thinking mind. It's moving in this wonderful air which goes far beyond what we know as life. And it is going to descend. It's going to manifest here to make Earth's life divine. Because that is the origin of our world. Truth made the world. Not a blind, unconscious nature force. Those large diviner heights are not with us now, but perhaps we can look upwards and make a connection with those summits high above us, that highest form of the sun, the superconscious blaze, which is glorious with the very face of God. That's our eternal part, our eternal aspect. And there, in that eternal aspect, is the figure, the shape, the image of the divine being that each of us really is. With his young, unaging look on deathless things. His joy in our escape from death and time. His immortality and light and bliss. All that is pre-existent, and it's waiting for us. Wonderful lines.
What does it mean by the very face of God?
Very here meaning absolutely, truly, the real true face of God. The word very, it can be used like that for emphasis. Like in Sanskrit we have the word eva. No? It's the same way that it's used. Larry, shall we go on?
Our larger being sits behind cryptic walls. There are greatnesses hidden in our unseen parts that wait for our to step into life's front. We feel an aid from deep indwelling gods. One speaks within. Light comes to us from above. Our soul from its mysterious chamber acts, its influence pressing on our heart and mind, pushes them to exceed their mortal selves. It seeks for good and beauty and for God. We see beyond self walls, our limitless self. We gaze through our world's glass at half-seen vast. We hunt for the truth behind apparent things. Our inner mind dwells in a larger light. Its brightness looks at us through hidden doors. Our members luminous glow, and wisdom's face appears in the doorway of the mystic ward. When she enters into our house of outward sense, then we look up and see above her son.
Thank you.
So the pronoun at the end there, the feminine pronoun, is referring back to wisdom?
Yes. These are the greatnesses that are hidden in the parts we are not aware of, the unseen parts. There's the soul in its mysterious chamber. He had described it sitting there, a hidden king, living on the sweet honey of solitude. But it acts, it influences our surface being, presses on the heart and mind. And then there's the inner mind, which has a vaster light than the surface mind. So that's also looking at us, observing us, and gradually its powers are growing in us. Gradually our members, the parts of our nature, they grow luminous, and wisdom begins to appear to us in the doorway, the entrance to that inner realm. And when she really comes forward, when she steps out and enters into us and takes possession of us, then we can look up and see that sun of truth above. And then there's a life self, Praveen. Would you read about that?
A mighty life self with its inner power supports the dwarfish modicum you call life. It can grasp a tongue or crawl two strong wheels. Our body's subtle self is thrown within. In its viewless palace of veridical green, there are bright shadows of the thoughts of God. In the prone obscure beginnings of the race, the human grew in the bowed ape-like man. It stood erect, a godlike form and force, and the soul's thoughts looked out from earth-born eyes. Man stood erect, he bore the thinker's brow. He looked at heaven and saw his comrade stars. A vision came of beauty and greater birth, slowly emerging from the heart's chapel of light, and moved in a wide, lucent air of dreams. He saw his being's unrealized vastness. He aspired and housed
Thank you. We often feel the limitations of our physical life and our physical body. So it's nice, it's really good to remember that there's this mighty life self which is supporting all this. And he says, this is a lovely line, it can graft upon our crawl two puissant wings. No? Here we are creeping along within our limitations. But if we can contact that mighty life self, it can give us powerful wings. We don't need to crawl anymore. It can carry us very far. And within us also, there's the body's subtle self. It's a kind of king. We don't see that palace. We don't look into it. But it's full of dreams. Dreams that signify truth. Veridical means truth speaking. The body has truth speaking dreams of what it can become. And these are bright shadows of the thoughts of God. If we can contact that body's subtle self within, it can give us possibilities of health and strength that we never believed were possible, and which are part of our future destiny.
You also report that the mother put so much effort on the physical development, the physical strength in the ashram.
Yes, she said through physical education we can make our outer body more receptive to receive these greater powers. If that's what we concentrate on.
Why is the palace used?
We are not very aware of what is going on in the inside of our body. No, it's as if there may be windows, but there are curtains over them. We can't see into it. We don't see it. Difficult. I mean, it is possible to become aware of some of the inner workings of the body, but at first not in much detail. But perhaps we can try to connect ourselves with and communicate with these other greatnesses that are hidden in us. Perhaps we can call upon and ask for help from the body's subtle self. So then begins a passage that is again about evolution. the process of evolution, in the very beginnings of the human race, the prone, obscure beginnings, before we stood up, when we were still crawling on the ground, and then begins to stand up. The human possibility grew in the bowed, ape-like man, the animal man, the Vanara. So in a similar way, the superhuman is growing in us human beings. That possibility is there. No? So the human involved in the bowed, ape-like man finally was able to stand erect with this form which we think, we feel is an image of the Lord even, a God-like form and force. And the soul can look out from these earth-born eyes. Man stood erect. He wore the thinker's brow. The new power of mind can become dominant. We don't know whether animals look up at the stars and wonder about them, but human beings seem to have done that from very early stage of our development. No? We can see that even when we look back to what we think are primitive human beings, they had a sense of beauty and some feeling that there must be higher possibilities. And Sri Aurobindo is helping us to see the unrealized vastnesses of our humanity and inspiring us to aspire and to hold within ourselves the semi-divine being which is being born now in evolution. Sudhanya, you'd continue?
Out of the beauty of the senses of the soul, the offer seeker into the open cave, behold the power and trust the intensity, he gains into the future. And unseen. He used the power of instrument cannot use the trustful means of the impossible. He thought of the dreams of the omniscient God, his schedule for the laws of omnipotence, because man in his little house made of hearts lost. He was an unseen veil of thoughts and dreams, looking into the past histories of his mind, and a small group working in beauty, at last finding a long and narrow scale, he stood alone on the high roof of trees and saw the light of a spiritual sun. A sky who transcends his earthly self, stand to the vastness of his soul's new world, within encirclement by mortal things, and moves in a pure, free spiritual realm, as in the real depth of this stratosphere, the last end of all lines of divinity. He mounts by frail thread of his high souls, he visits his point of immortality, he calls the Godhead into his mortal life.
Thank you. So among the human race there have been, there are a few highly developed individuals who have gained these higher powers or who are influenced by these higher powers, who can use the powers earth instruments cannot use. And those exceptional human beings are able to seize fragments, little bits, tiny bits of the thought of the omniscient and can spread some kind of formulas or mantras or spells that seem to give omnipotence or that give a partial omnipotence. This has happened. No? Man, in this little house that we have made of earth's dust, has grown, is growing towards an unseen heaven of thought and dream, looking into the vast vistas of his mind on a small globe dotting infinity, our little globe. How beautiful. And the further development is really a spiritual development. At last, climbing this long and narrow stair up out onto the roof of things, beyond the limitations of earth, can see the light of the spiritual sun. By aspiration, he is able to transcend his earthly self, and the soul can be delivered. Yes, yes, Sophie.
So up to now, it's in the past
time. Yes. Yes. Yes, isn't that nice? So that's already been established. Yes. 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 I don't know whether he's really speaking about occultism here. He's talking about the secret hidden seeker, but who is able to hear and see more than ordinary people normally do. So in this sense, maybe a prophet, but also perhaps a miracle worker, people who can do things that seem impossible to ordinary beings. No?
Because the prophets are revealed by the divine God.
They are catching perhaps fragments of the omniscient's thought, or they're seeing something in the future. They have a sight which is beyond that of ordinary human beings. But anyway, these are things that, as Sophie pointed out, they have been established. And now we have this next step to make. We can, through aspiration, transcend the earthly self, redeemed from encirclement by mortal things. When we were reading in The Life Divine about how the spirit within has to disentangle itself or disengage itself from the domination of the mind, the life, and the body, and live in its own right. I think that is this stage. And then the great spiritual seekers, as he describes Asvapati at the beginning, he can, like a spider almost, climbing up this frail thread to the origin, you know, he can reach the source of his immortal being, and he can call that divinity into his mortal life. So who would read next? Would you read? Yeah.
Such was the spiritual change to be. Out of the mystic cavern in man's heart, the heavenly psyche must put on her veil and step into common nature's crowded room and stand uncovered with that nature's throne and rule its thoughts and feed the body in life. Obedient to a high command, she sat. Time
once like you a sight that must break through and liberate the God. And the God imprisoned in the visionless mortal mind. The inferior nature born into ignorance is still too large to face. It veils itself and must be pushed aside to fight for soul.
Thank you. So this is why this dream has come to her at this point. It's not just a knowledge to be absorbed. It's to show her that she has followed this whole line of development and now she has a mission. She's here with a mission. A portion of the Mighty Mother has come into her and marked her the center of this grand scheme. The idea is to mold humanity into God's own shape and lead this great, blind, struggling world to light, or a new world discover or create. So this is Savitri's mission. Either Earth must transform herself and equal heaven, the material principle can undergo this transformation, or the higher levels of consciousness have to descend into this earthly state that's dominated or subject to death. But this is a vast spiritual change, and for it to happen out of the mystic cavern in man's heart, the chamber where the soul dwells, the heavenly psyche, the soul, must take off her veil, step out into the world, into nature's crowded rooms, stand uncovered in that nature's front. This is the psychic realization, the psychic transformation, the psychic ruling the body and the life. So she sees that that is what she's being asked to do now. So obedient to this high command, she's sitting, she's seeing that all these things which determine our awareness and our actions, time, life and death, these are just passing incidents. And they are preventing her from seeing what she needs to see. She's blocking, they are blocking the consciousness. She has to break through and set free the divinity within her. And this outer, lower nature that's born into the ignorance is still taking far too large a place in her. In her awareness. It's veiling her true self and it must be pushed aside to find her soul. That's what has to be done and that's what's described in the next three cantos. And of course Sri Aurobindo is describing this journey for us so that we can also follow it. He's showing us the steps that can be taken. We can all follow this injunction, you know, remember why thou camest. See if you can remember.
When I was leading to become a true Aurobindian, Mary Mother says that to become a true
the first necessity is to find out who you really are. Yes. This is it. Yes. And that is the mission of Auroville. We don't seem to be proceeding very far with it, but perhaps some of this slow, difficult evolution is happening, of Earth transforming herself, heaven descending into Earth, and for a new world being discovered or created. That's the purpose. But for that, there has to be some collaboration Mothers repeatedly said it. There must be some response, some collaboration. So that's the great opportunity that's offered to us. Auroville has been created, offered to the world for this possibility. And we should try to take away this veil of the inferior nature, no? Born into ignorance, which all of us are carrying with us, to the extent that we can find out who we really are and allow that to become the active center of our life in Auroville, then Auroville will be able to fulfill its mission. More people can do that. So I always say it's no use complaining that Auroville isn't what Mother wanted it to be. All of us who are inspired by this dream, we all have to participate to make it what Mother wanted it to be. And this is the only way to do it. We are still so much in this mixture of the mind that we think we can do it by making rules and regulations and arranging things and changing this organization and that organization. Impossible. First, we have to find the active center and allow that to show us the way to go. And that, of course, is what Matrimandia is for, and that's what all the vicissitudes of our daily life are for, to give us that opportunity. And that's why we meet here, to try and understand Sri Aurobindo's vision by reading Savitri. So there are several steps in this unveiling from the lower nature. And Savitri starts by entering into the inner countries. This is quite a long canto with several stages, but we could make a start and read some of it. Bridget, you are next. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Amitosh.
Then Savitri surged out of her body's wall and stood a little span outside herself and looked into her subtle being's depths. and in its heart, as in a lotus bud.
Divined.
Divined her secret and mysterious soul. At the dim portal of the inner light that bars out from our depth the body's mind, and all that lives but by the body's breath, she knocked and pressed against the ebony gate. The living portal groaned with sudden hinge. Heavily reluctant, it complained inert against the tyranny of the spirit's touch. A formidable voice cried from within, "Back, creature of earth, lest tortured and torn thou die." A dreadful murmur rose like a dim sea. The serpent of the threshold hissing rose. A fatal guardian hood with monstrous coils. The hounds of darkness growled with jaws agape. And trolls and gnomes and goblins scowled and stared. And wild beasts roaring thrilled the blood with fear. And menace muttered in a dangerous tongue. Unshaken, her will pressed on the rigid bars. The gate swung wide with a protesting jar. The opponent powers withdrew their dreadful guard. Her being entered into the inner worlds.
Thank you. Leila.
In the narrow passage, the subconscious gate, she breathed with difficulty and pain and strove to find the inner self concealed in sense. Into a dense of subtle matter packed, the cavity filled with a blind mass of power. An opposition of misleading dreams, a heavy barrier of unseen sight, she forced her way through the body to the soul. Across a perilous border line she passed, her life dips into the subconscious dust, all struggles from matter into chaos of mind. As born with elemental entities and fluttering shapes of vague half-bodied thought and glued to the wings of incontinent force. At first, a difficult narrowness was there, a press of uncertain powers and drifting ways. All was there, but nothing in its place. At times an opening came, the door was forced. She crossed through spaces of a secret self and trod in passages of inner time.
Thank you. Mary?
At last she broke into a form of things, the start of infiniteness, a world of sense. But all was still confused, nothing self-found. Soul was not there, but only cries of love. A throng, a glamorous air environed her. A world of sounds, refined signifiers. A dissonant clash of cries and contrary calls. A mob of visions grow across the sight. A jostled sequence, lacking sense and slight sweet. Feelings push through a pack and burden heart. Each force is separate inconscient will. It cares for nothing but its ego's drive. A ready without heed of common will. Thought stared at though.
At thought.
Thought stared at though and pulled at the tame brain. As if to pluck the reason from its suit. And cast it forth into life's wide side brain. So much forgotten lie in nature's mouth. abandoned the slave, sentinel of the soul. So could life's power shape and his mind rule. Nature renounced the spirit's government. And the bare elemental energies make up the sense of glory of boundless joy. A splendor of ecstasy, aesthetic energy, a rhythm forever mighty and that of utter bliss.
Thank you.
This was the senseless instinct void of soul, for when the soul sleeps, even void of power. But now the vital Godhead waits within, and lifts the light with the supernal touch. But how shall come the glory of the flame, if mind is cast away into the abyss? For body without mind has not the light, the rector of spirit's hands, the joy of life. All then becomes a conscient, tenebrous, and conscience puts its seal on nature's page, or else a mad disorder whirls the brain, posting alone for alleged nature's words. A chaos of disordered impulses, in which no light can come, no joy nor peace. This state now threatened, this she pushed from her, as if in a long, endless, tossing street, one driven beneath a trampling, hurried crowd. Hour after hour she fought without release, holding by her will the senseless mood at bay. Out of the dreadful press, she cracked her will and fixed her thought upon the Savior's name. Then all grew still and empty. She was free. A large delivering scene of her vast arm's face. And while she moved through a grand tranquility of naked light from an invisible sun, a void that was a bodiless happiness, a blissful vacuum of nameless peace.
Thanks, Lorraine.
And now, a mightier, dangerous front drew near. Oppress a bodily mind, being conscience blue of aimless thought and will had fallen from her. Approaching loomed a giant head of light, ungoverned by mind or soul, subconscient, vast. It tossed all power into a single drive. It made its power a might of dangerous seas, into the stillness of her silent self, into the whiteness of its muse of space, a spate, a torrent of the speed of life, broke like a wind-lashed driven mob of waves, racing on the pale floor of summer sand. It drowned its bank, a mountain of climbing waves. Enormous was its vast and passionate voice. It cried to her visiting spirit as it ran, demanding God's submission to changeless force, a deaf force calling to a status dumb, a thousand voices in a muted vast. It climbed the heart's support for its clutch at joy, for it need to act the witness soul's consent, for its lust of power, the neutral being seal into the wideness of her watching self. It brought a grandiose gust of the breath of life. Its torrent carried the world's hopes and fears, all life's, all nature's dissatisfied, hungry cry, and the longing all eternity cannot feel.
Thank you. Thank you.
it called to the mountain secrecies of the soul and the miracle of a never-dying fire. It spoke to some first inexpressible ecstasy hidden in the creative beat of life. Out of the nether, unseen deeps, it tore its lure and magic of disordered bliss into earth-like for its maze of tangled charm. And heady draught of nature's primitive joy and the fire and mystery of forbidden delight drunk from the world libido's bottomless well and the honey sweet poison wine of lust and death, but dreamed a vintage of glory of life's gods and felt as celestial rapture's golden sting. The cycles of the infinity of desire and the mystique that made an unrealized world wider than the known and closer than the unknown, in which hunt forever about the hounds of mind and life. Tempted a deep dissatisfied urge within to long for the unfulfilled and ever far, and make this life upon a limiting earth a climb towards summits vanishing in the void, a search for the glory of the impossible.
Thank you.
It dreamed of that which never has been known. It grasped at that which never has been won. It chased into an Elysian memory the charms that flee from the heart's soon lost delight. It dared the force that slays, the joys that hurt. The imaged shape of unaccomplished things and the summons to a Circean transmuting dance and passion's tenancy of the courts of love and the wild beasts ramp and romp with beauty and life. It brought its cry and surge of opposite powers, its movements of the touch of luminous plans, its flame ascensions and sky-pitched vast attempts, its fiery towers of dream built on the winds, its sinkings towards the darkness and the abyss, its honey of tenderness, its sharp wine of hate, its changes of sun and cloud, of laughter and tears, its bottomless danger pits and swallowing gulfs, its fear and joy and ecstasy and despair, its occult wizardries, its simple lines and great communions and uplifting moods, its faith in heaven, its intercourse with hell.
Thank you.
These poems were not loaned with the dead weight of earth. They gave ambrosia's taste and poison's sting. There was an ardor in the gauge of life that saw heaven blue in the grey air of night. The impulses godward soared on passion's wings. Mind quick-paced horse floated from their high necks, a glowing splendor as of an irised mane, of peril of pure into sun's light. Its flame put yellow they could imitate. Mind's voices mimic in inspiration strays. Its
ictus
of infallibility. Its speed and lightning, heavenly of God of the gods, or trenchant blade that show the nets of doubt. Its sword of discernment seemed almost divine. Yet all that knowledge was a borrowed song. The forms that came were not heaven's native words. An inner voice could speak the unreal's word. It quiescent dangerous and absolute, could mingle poison with the wine of God. On these high shining backs, falsehood could ride. Truth lay with delight in error's passionate arms, gliding downstream in a bleak, glided breeze.
A blithe, gilded barge.
She aced her ray with a magnificent lie.
Thank you. It's the picture of Queen Cleopatra on the Nile in a beautiful golden barge, and she's gliding downstream, not upwards. So I think we will pause there today. We will hear Mother's lines. Again, we will listen to the passages at the beginning of the previous canto. Let's hear those three at the beginning of the previous canto, because we'll be coming back to this. Before we move into this rather sometimes difficult and painful canto, we can hear these wonderful lines of reminder from the beginning of Canto 2.
Gave a star and the raging golden statue. dies with my faith.